the way that I envisioned, given who invited me and the topic of the conference, I wanted to talk about how to communicate the pro-life understanding to a culture that's largely hostile to it. So one of the points that I make in the lecture, and so you relied heavily on the encyclical authored by John Paul II on this topic, is how the modern world has largely accepted a view of the human person which is ultimately hostile to the culture of life. And in part of my presentation, I deal with this recent article that appeared in the Journal of Medical Ethics defending what the authors call afterbirth abortion. And so what I do is critique that article in a way that models an approach to that one can employ to respond to these sorts of arguments. The case that I make is that even those that are hostile to the culture of life, down deep, assume or rely on understandings of the human person that we can use to show them that ultimately their own view is incorrect. And there I quote from John Paul II's own comments about the fact that we have a shared understanding of reason, and that we have an awareness of the natural moral law. So that's going to be the focus of my talk.
So in just a few words, how does Evangelium Vitae, how does Culture of Life fit overall into the new evangelization project that, in fact, the last three popes have spoken out very highly about?
Well, when we talk about the new evangelization, we could mean several things. In every case, it always involves the good news. That is to say, telling people about the good news of Jesus Christ. And that means a variety of things. It means the implications of the gospel to every facet of life. And that also means being able to quote St. Peter, to give an answer to those that ask of us. And so I envision the application of the new evangelization to the gospel of life in this sense, giving answers to people who are in fact challenging us on the gospel of life. And so, and what evangelization meaning, not only telling people the good news, but giving them reasons why they ought to believe in it. This is a strange time in history. I guess all times are somewhat strange from the perspective of the present, but it's a strange time insofar as the church in the past could rely on the fact that people generally held a sort of common Christian culture. That is being lost in many areas of the world. And so, I think we have to do is not only attempt to restore that culture by changing institutions, but giving those who doubt our point of view reasons why they ought to change. And I think I see that as when we talk about the new evangelization and the gospel of life, that's how I see them working together.
And can you speak, you're coming from Texas in the United States. Mm-hmm. Can you speak a little bit about maybe particular areas in which this can be applied? I mean, we speak kind of generally about bringing this to people and helping them understand that we have a common ground and leading them to an appreciation of the culture of life. Can you talk about some specific issues where you see that playing out in contemporary society in the United States, for instance?
Sure. I mean, there's obviously the abortion controversy, which has been going on for quite some time. Questions in biomedical ethics concerning end-of-life issues, that is, what is the role of the physician in advancing the health of the patient? What is the good of the patient? I see it in areas concerning conscience rights of Christians and Catholics when it comes to practicing medicine. This is something that is mentioned in the encyclical, but you know, at the time, people thought, well, you know, it didn't seem to really apply. But now with some of the political issues concerning healthcare in the United States, you know, the question of conscience rights is important. And in there, I see it particularly important for us to explain why, for example, it is wrong for the government to coerce a Catholic institution to distribute contraception or to force the business to give abortion-causing drugs to or allow their employees to purchase them through their the health plan. Because oftentimes what I think the mistake that we sometimes make as Catholics, especially American Catholics, is to say something like, well, we have a religious liberty to do this. And that's correct. But I think a lot of people in the secular world say, yeah, you may have a religious liberty to do this, but it's a foolish belief to hold. So I think you need not only to advance the legal case, which I think people have done very well on this, but I also think we have to say, not only do we have a right to do it, it's actually based on pretty reasonable arguments. Here's why. So that's how I see the application of, at least in the contemporary scene in the United States.
And just very briefly, could you give us some idea of the fundamental principles that you'd advance when you're talking to someone who doesn't share our perspective?
Yeah, well, one thing that I do this in the classroom at Baylor. I teach a course called Introduction to Medical Ethics, and I ask my students, and I actually give them a scenario. I learned from a television show that's no longer on the air anymore. There was a show that involved two plastic surgeons, and one time a gentleman walks into their office and asks for his right leg to be amputated, and the surgeons say to him, Well, were you in an accident? Do you need it removed? He goes, no, it's healthy, but I believe that I'm a handicapped person trapped in the body of somebody that has healthy limbs. And so my students immediately say, no, the physician shouldn't do it. And I ask them, well, what's the principle? And the principle is that the physician should do what is good for the patient, and that's not always the same as what the patient wants. And what's interesting is that on that, but then you move to more controversial questions and you bring up things like sex reassignment surgery, then they sort of hesitate. But the point is to get them to see the principle and to understand that doing good for somebody is not the same thing as doing for them what they want. And that's a distinction that's often lost, because we've tended to use the language of litigious language. So we say things like interest. You know, the patient has an interest. And from a moral perspective, the patient's interest is what's good for the patient. From a legal perspective, the patient's interest may be what he wants. And those they don't always align with each other.
And going back just a little bit, one of the goals of the conference that you're going to be at this weekend is to show the central role that the gospel of life continues to have in the church's mission of the new evangelization. We talked about that a little at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Can you explain a little bit better, why is the culture of life, why is sharing the truths about life fundamental mm-hmm. today in the overall goal of evangelization, of sharing the good news?
If you look at, for example, in the teachings of Jesus, the Sermon on the Mount, the way in which he talks about our obligation to those who are vulnerable and poor and those that require the assistance of others, that's the central focus of the gospel of life. And so to actually advance the gospel of life is, in fact, to advance the charitable commands of Christ. And so when we talk, for example, of what we owe those that are at the end of life, let's say people that are because they're of illness or age, simply cannot do for themselves, the culture of death says their life is worthless. They should be allowed to kill themselves. The culture of life says, no, they are intrinsically valuable human beings, and surely they can't take care of themselves, but that doesn't make them worthless. It allows us to act in charity for their good. And so there's a kind of mystery there. That is, on the one hand, we help them and we make sure their last days are comfortable and that we treat them with respect and dignity. On the other hand, though, this is an opportunity for God's grace to work through us. And so the gospel of life is, I think, at the end of the day, a sort of real life application of the moral commands that Christ gave us in the New Testament.
And it really does have a broader focus than what some people see as just the sexual issues, abortion, homosexuality, and whatnot. It also has a broader...
That's absolutely correct. And I think, I think one reason why people tend to focus on that is because on those, you know, they tend to get, you know, the most attention with the media. And partly because, at least in the United States, the courts have really wrestled with them. And we tend to think, wrongly that if something's dealt with by the federal courts, therefore it's the only thing that's important, and that's certainly not the case.
Mm. And it sounds like it ties in very well with the focus that Pope Francis has brought in recent days to the charitable works of the church broadly, helping the poor and embracing those who, as you said, were the most vulnerable in society.
That's right.
Very good. Is there anything else you want to throw in here before we finish up?
Well, it's great to be in Rome. I've never been here before. I did write a book called Return to Rome, although I'd actually never been to Rome. So it's nice to live the metaphor.